I'm going to discuss some of the people at the Hoover Institute that are going to Washington, D.C., or have been the advisors of Ronald Reagan. But I want to mention that they have a book published. It was written in 1980, and they spent $1 million, $1.5 million at Hoover Institute. It's 868-page book. You can write to the Hoover Institute, Stanford University. And as for this book, I just learned about the book. It has contributions from 32 scholars, educators, economists. And the underlying thesis of the book, according to George Marotta, Hoover Public Affairs Coordinator, is that the Great Society, the New Frontier, is dead and finished. That what John Kennedy started with the Great Society and what Lyndon Johnson had as what he called his Great Frontier are dead forever. The description of this book says it advises an increase in defense spending and a dismantling of social programs that no longer work if they ever did. If we are to eschew our country's long-term decline, we must come to understand the proper limits of public action. Individual initiative and responsibility must replace government controls and direction. We need more competition and less regulation. Now, who killed the Great Society? Who killed the New Frontier? I mentioned that at the beginning of the program. It was killed by those people who saw Kennedy murdered, who saw that crook Lyndon Johnson get in. He was linked with the crime figures and Bobby Baker and houses of prostitution and murders in Texas. They saw those people work their way up and become president of the United States and then lie, the discrepancies, the hundreds of books questioning the Warren Commission report. Where are those people who should be speaking up, whether it's Dr. Spock or the Berrigan brothers or the Salingers, Schlesinger, Coretta King, Andrew Young, Jesse Jackson? They were on the balcony when Martin Luther King was killed. Where are the people that the Great Society was going to help? There were articles in the paper this week. One of them, blacks are worried about Reagan coming in. Did they vote? Why didn't they vote? All of a sudden, they're worried about Reagan. Did they wake up Wednesday and realize that Reagan was a problem? And where were they the 8 years he was governor of California? He took California by storm. They're going to get nervous now. They're having councils and war councils. And this is what I said would happen if Reagan got in, that some of these lazy people that have sat back and took it for granted that there were programs for your old age, that there is money for Social Security in the till, that there is security here. They're saying to you, get out of it now. It's dead. The social programs don't work. We're going to spend money for defense. Why? Not because we need the weapons, but it's contracts and the people that get the contracts, the Boeings, the Rockwells, the Lockheeds, pay us a percentage of their profits to run our campaigns to keep us in office. So we'll say they need more weapons. It's a sifting of money in and out of pockets to make things that we'll never be able to use, but look great and give the illusion of employment. And if we can't stop them, then they deserve to win. There's an article in the San Francisco Chronicle this week. Reagan's team of Stanford scholars, a happy group at the Hoover Institute. More than a half a dozen Hoover scholars will be packing and moving with Reagan to the White House staff or sub-cabinet levels, and they all have close ties to the Hoover Institute. They mentioned two people, for example, Martin Anderson and Daryl Trent, who are top-ranking advisors on domestic affairs to Ronald Reagan, who headed the Office of Emergency Services under the Nixon administration on leave of absence from the Hoover Tower. Well, 7 years ago in 1973 of August, in my second published article in The Realist, the Senate Select Committee is part of the cover-up of Watergate, I had a list of institutions to be dismantled, and the point I made 7 years ago, it was called Martial Law Without the Riots. We already had it, and one of the services was the Office of Emergency Service that they want to put in our home for $5, a two-way listening device where they can hear us and everything we say on the excuse that there's earthquakes or floods or hurricanes. And this warning I wrote about, this 1984-ish warning system, was devised by James McCord and the White House team of Office of Emergency Service working with Ronald Reagan. And I wrote about the natural disasters that would come and go, but the Office of Emergency Service would remain. I listed General Haig as a danger, the Office of Management Budget being controlled by hidden money from the government for intelligence and fascism, and different government agencies I wrote about that had to be dismantled 7 years ago. And now this team is again back in office. The Hoover Institute is described as the hallmark of anti-communism put up by Herbert Hoover with a $50,000 check 61 years ago. That was in 1919. In the book, The Great Conspiracy, it describes November 22, 1918, the same date that Kennedy was killed on November 22nd, but 1918, rather. After the First World War, 11 days after the armistice, the United States was trying to stop the Russian Revolution and sending troops, and Herbert Hoover was using relief money, $50 million from the United States, to fight the Red Army back there in 1918, and using another $23 million to aid children in Central Europe that actually went to arms against the Soviet Union. Hoover, as I said, owned over $1 billion in those days in Soviet Union in cash investments. And when he saw the menace of communism and now he lost his $1 billion, he gave $50,000 check, which probably came from various people in the United States government at the time, the same Congress that gave him the money to arm Poland and eventually to arm Adolf Hitler. And he began this institute that is now finally directing Ronald Reagan's policies. And the theme of the institute is increase defense and dismantle your social programs. They're all dead. The director of the institute is a W. Glenn Campbell, president of Hoover Institute, an intimate of Ronald Reagan's. Reagan appointed him to the Board of Regents in California, University of California, and he takes care of the education policy. That's why we have no radicals or no brilliant professors or teachers arising out of the University of California at this time. And Reagan began, of course, to raise the tuition prices. Another man there is Peter Duignan, D-U-I-G-N-A-N. I've had to start a file of each one of these names, even though I've had them around a few years. There's a new article out about them, and at least they're surfacing. Peter Duignan, who has been advising Reagan on foreign policy, writes his speeches that you hear later. He has said recently that Soviet Ambassador Anatole Dobrynin is an absolute swine. He says, don't believe, he's conning the American people to believe that the Soviet Union is armed only because they fear invasion, and that has to be their foreign policy because we'll come in and overthrow them. In reality, according to Duignan, Russia is an expansionist state bent on world domination. The same people that put Hitler into power and sent Nazis to all the countries in South America and Africa and Southeast Asia and all around Asia, Japan, and South Korea say that the Russians are expansionists. He says, to see the communist menace used to get you a label as a nut. People don't want to see that the struggle is eternal. You must be eternally opposed to them if you want a democratic society. There is no democratic society in Chile. There's no democratic society in Argentina or in Brazil or Paraguay or Uruguay or South Korea or the Philippines or Saudi Arabia or in Jordan or you name it. There is no democratic society in these places, and it has nothing to do with communism. It has to do with fascism. But this man says that he wants a national security post with Ronald Reagan. He says the United States should never recognize a Marxist regime and never be fooled if there's a national liberation front with Marxist elements. Put it down. The Marxist governments have taken power that are in power are far bloodier and oppressive than anything dreamed by the right wing. This is Peter Duignan from Hoover Institute. I doubt if Allende would have been bloodier or oppressive. I doubt if the people in Nicaragua are as bad as when Somoza was there. I seriously doubt if the United States didn't overthrow Manley down in Jamaica and cause hundreds of murders for that election this week for the bauxite and the traffic that goes on down there. I doubt if we stayed away if they would be bloody. I don't see socialist countries such as Canada, almost socialist, or Sweden, or the Scandinavian countries so bloody where you have socialism and regimes that take care of the people. I don't see them bloody. He says this man has contempt for Henry Kissinger. He thinks Kissinger is too far left. He was like Chamberlain. He just wanted to survive in our time. He said, if I'm asked to join the administration, it will be at a high level. I have to have real power. I'm not interested in being a showpiece. This character has been at Stanford since 1950, 30 years, and Peter Duggan will be high up on the cabinet if he has his way. Roger Freeman was domestic affairs advisor for Richard Nixon before John Ehrlichman came in. He's from the Hoover Institute, and he will work on spending controls and education task force. He was there at the time of Operation Chaos and domestic policy and terrorism, particularly in California, similar to czarist regimes in Russia in terms of what the FBI and the CIA were doing. He preceded Ehrlichman and works from the Hoover Institute. There's a Robert Hall, there a senior fellow who will talk about inflation policy tax force, and Milton Friedman, the great economist, who's going to limit our federal expenditures. He is violently anti-communist. He wants to advise Ronald Reagan. His name is well known. He's a Nobel Prize-winning economist. He will help stop employment, to freeze hiring, get people off welfare and payrolls, get cheap labor in the country, cut Social Security benefits, continue closing mental hospitals, and he will take the government off the backs of the large corporations so that they can have minimum wages. The Milton Friedman from the Hoover Institute will be something very unique when he really has power again. These guys advised Richard Nixon, but this is a whiff of the power behind Ronald Reagan. And I'll do more on this Richard Allen from the Hoover Institute. His name has been in the news recently, and I've mentioned him. But I'll get back to him in a minute. I do want to mention a few of the winners and losers of the election now, and I'll do more next week because we only have 15 minutes. Los Angeles Police Chief Ed Davis won for the California Senate. I can't believe in a city the size of Los Angeles with blacks, Chicanos, the police force, the killer teams, the question of the killer teams down there, the exposés of Ed Davis, the book, the Glass House tapes, the work that Don Freed did, and the Black Panthers, the women's, the Chicanos, the moratoriums that turned out to be rigged. Unless the voting machine was rigged, I cannot believe that the Democrats couldn't put someone against Ed Davis to come to the California Senate. He spent about $350,000, and he won by a large majority. There was a woman who ran against him who was not known. He didn't have a strong opponent, a man like Ed Davis, in the Senate of California working his way up. The sleeper, when Ronald Reagan comes to power, is going to be Evel Younger, who is another part of the Gestapo team who will probably be head of the FBI or on the Supreme Court when Ronald Reagan gets into office. Lewis Tackwood wrote the book, The Glass House Tapes. And again, in 1973, I wrote about his allegations of the Los Angeles Police Department, how they had an espionage squad inside the White House that was linked to the White House. How Ed Davis and the police talked about wanting a Gestapo in this country. They were linked to J. Edgar Hoover and William Sullivan of Division 5 and the assassination teams, that Squad 19 was going to kill Richard Nixon in San Diego, that the police department of Squad Criminal Conspiracy Section had provocateurs that were going to cause violence at the time of the conventions. The conventions later were moved to Miami. And I wrote the things that Lewis Tackwood said at that time about men under the name of Martin and White, who were the contact of the Los Angeles Police Department to the White House. And later, James McCord checked in with the name Martin, and E. Howard Hunt was White at the time of the Watergate arrest. There were allegations of millions of dollars set aside for secret martial law plans. This all involved the Los Angeles Police Department, and I have article after article about the discrepancies, the Robert Kennedy assassination, the murder in the Ambassador Hotel, the Los Angeles Police Department. They have on record 10 bullets, and Sirhan's gun shot 8, and they say Sirhan did it alone. A security guard, Thane Caesar, has been named over and again for killing Robert Kennedy from the back of the head. Sirhan's bullets didn't get into Robert Kennedy's body. the Manson affair, the SLA, the murder of the people, six in the home of the SLA at the time Patty Hearst was kidnapped. The connections of the LAPD, I wrote up in the SLA as the CIA. But the amount of research that I put together on this work, I don't do it alone. I get Lewis Tackwood's material from a book that was published by Avon Press. Where are the people in Los Angeles that sent Ed Davis to the Senate in California? I have a sister-in-law who knows the work I do, who's concerned, cuts articles but can't get the family or brother-in-law or people, you know, politically interested. And she called this week. I think I'll have 12 people over or so and have a gathering. What tape do you have on the Nazis? What could they listen to or discuss? I said, I've done 9 years on the Nazis. Which one do you want? You can order all of them. We're up to 466 this week. You can get 466 of them if you want. But where are those people that didn't come out, that didn't call the radio talk shows, that didn't understand the victims of Ed Davis, that didn't get on and tell other people? How could they not vote? And in Pennsylvania, Arlen Specter, many of you don't know his name, he was on the Warren Commission. He worked for the CIA. He created that single bullet theory that defied the law of physics. He won for his position for the U.S. Senate from Pennsylvania. Arlen Specter, a man who earlier, he was once a Democrat, he turned Republican. He served 8 years as a district attorney in Philadelphia. And he ran for mayor in Philadelphia, and he lost. He ran for prosecutor, and he lost. He ran a Senate nomination, and he lost. And he ran for the governor, and he lost. And this time, he won. And Specter was organized. He had a great campaign. And he had John Hines, a Republican from Pennsylvania, and the most politically conservative people behind him. And now we have Arlen Specter from the assassination days of John Kennedy into the Senate of the United States. They say John Connally is going to get a cabinet appointment by Ronald Reagan. His name runs through the fabrics of Watergate, the Kennedy assassination, the cover-ups, and he will get on the cabinet along with the others. And of course, Leon Jaworski of the Warren Commission organized a group behind Ronald Reagan, and they're all very active and in the news. The people that killed John Kennedy are still working their way up into the system and or behind the Robert Kennedy assassination or Martin Luther King's murders, and they get themselves entrenched into a system, and they'll stay there for good. I'm sure that if you're not smart enough to vote them out this time, you won't be able to get them out next time. Not unless you start tomorrow with political activity. The Moral Majority were on Good Morning America, the Today Show, and they asked what they were they satisfied with their victories, the way they swept out the Congress. And they were perfectly happy. They said, if I were Senator Ted Kennedy, and they mentioned Morris Udall, who got in this time, and two or three others, he said, they're dead next time. Next time the election comes, they're out. Forget it. They start work this week. If the election was this Tuesday, I'm sure that after a little partying and a few mints and jelly beans, by next Tuesday, they will have marked on the calendar who they're going to target in the 50 states, and they'll organize and keep a record and bumper stickers and call talk shows and write letters to the newspaper and sit together and decide who they want out next, and they'll get them out next. The interesting thing about this election, I will go down the names if we don't have time this week, I'll do it next week, that when the oldies got bounced out, these terrible phony liberals like Birch Bayh and Frank Church, these do-nothing middle liberals that were targeted, good riddance, I think good riddance of them, because they didn't do enough, they didn't open up the things they were supposed to be doing. But when they were targeted, the members of the Senate and the House of Representatives are replaced with young people now, 24, 34, 27 years of age. A few oldies like Goldwater got in again. You know, he'll be crawling in on his hands and legs with Hayakawa to the Senate. Like Douglas of the Supreme Court, they'll put them in wheelchairs and carry them in to keep them as long as they can. But to replace them, they don't have any old ones. The only old ones are the people, the henchmen around Ronald Reagan from Los Angeles, Holmes Tuttle, and a gang that I'll go into and do some biographies. They've all been buddies since 1946, and they're octogenarians now, just about, Justin Dart and that gang. But they know what they wanted, and they stayed together. They didn't split. Nobody came in and broke them up. And, boy, you got to give them credit. And speaking of breaking up, one of the nastiest campaigns was in New York City with Elizabeth Holtzman. I see that Shirley Chisholm got back in, but there's women that have tried to get the Senate and didn't get it, and there are people out of office such as Bella Abzug and Yvonne Burke. She lost. She was in the House of Representatives and went for the Board of Supervisors, a woman who was on the House Select Committee of Assassinations and covered up. Again, a black woman covering up the death of Martin Luther King and John Kennedy. I'm glad she lost in L.A. The moral majority ran a dirty campaign against her, but she wasn't much anyway. If the Democrats are going to be so slimy and sleazy, good riddance. At least know what you're getting and get rid of these people. Now, Elizabeth Holtzman is a woman who has tried to fight the oil company. She has tried to help the she's worked with the immigration investigations to ferret out Nazis who came here illegally. She's been a very good, consistent, conscientious woman in the House of Representatives. And she's given the business, oh, you'd make a great senator. There's only another woman in the Senate. And it gets to her head and ego. So she runs against D'Amato and Javits, Senator Jacob Javits. Javits lost in the primary. And so he goes as an independent, runs as a liberal, traveling around to the Young Israel of Baywater Synagogue in New York City, talking to 150 Jews about how liberal Elizabeth Holtzman is, who's trying to protect their investment in this country, who's trying to tell them what's happening. And Javits takes enough votes added up that Elizabeth Holtzman is out. She goes for the Big Apple. She says the House of Representatives isn't enough. I guess I got to make the Senate. They give her a grandiose idea like Bella Abzug, who was pushed out by Monahan. They take these women who work to a certain point, and then they get their ego going that they're better than they are, and they run strong candidates against them or even weak ones and underpin them and put these women flat on their face so you don't even know about them. I'm glad Shirley Chisholm is in the House. I hope she doesn't run for the Senate. But Bella Abzug and Yvonne Burke and Elizabeth Holtzman are out. And Ms. Schroeder won in Colorado, but she stayed in the House of Representatives. That's the important thing. If she ran for the Senate, the old boys would have knocked her out, but she won in Colorado. And maybe that's where the women should be until they can prove who's kicking them out of the Senate. There was a miserable election in New York City, and D'Amato was really hitting her hard. But what was worse than his hitting her is the way the Javits went after her. These are what you call the Jewish New York liberals. They're not, he was a lobbyist or an agent for the Shah of Iran and for fascism in Iran and the Savak, and so was his wife, a bag woman. For those kind of people, they're people without principle who work themselves up, that are grandiose, who can flip from one party to the other and pose as liberals, vote fascist, kick out the liberals. One good thing, and I'll do a summary next week, is because we are running out of time, is kicking out the old lazy, sleazy, so-called liberals. I'm so glad they're out. There are many of you that won't agree with me, but I don't care. I personally would rather have somebody that I know where they stand than somebody I expect to be there and have them kicked out. Senator Frank Church was a fellow who in 1975 brought out the story of Judith Exner with John Kennedy, a woman that was sleeping with Sam Giancana and John Roselli and John Kennedy, alternating her friendships. And at the time of the Senate hearings, he brought Ms. Exner and tried to embarrass John Kennedy for what happened. I'm sure John Kennedy didn't know that when she was in the White House, she spent the evening down in Miami with the Central Intelligence Agency and the agents of Robert Mayhew and Frank Sinatra's gang who set this up with Sam Giancana. Kennedy probably didn't even know where she was in the morning, and they were transporting her. But Frank Church was consumed with embarrassing Kennedy. He didn't bring in Robert Mayhew or the people that should have been called to the Intelligence Committee, nor did he with the Intelligence Committee want to know about Jonestown and gun running and narcotics and mind control and the killing of Leo Ryan, a member of the Congress. Frank Church and Burge Bah and the whole schmear, as far as I'm concerned, were a do-nothing group of phony middle liberals that were targeted from the far right as being too far left. But from the way I see it, it's like standing on a heap of jello. You expect them to come through. There's a scandal. There's an investigation. There's murders. They don't come through at all. And that's why I feel badly when I see young people talking about the elections or what will we do. I came into KLRB tonight, and there's some young people here who don't know about the past and have no guideline for the future, no direction. And the most that young people have is the assumption that when a bomb comes, it'll come fast, that you're not going to live deformed like the people of Hiroshima or Nagasaki that walk around with their flesh peeling. I don't know why the alternative is I'll live it to the hilt and go fast. At some point, are there going to be people who are going to get together and begin to accumulate facts about the people behind Ronald Reagan, about what he's going to do if a country is to be overthrown, such as Fidel Castro's Cuba? Is Castro doing wrong by the people there? Do we have a right? Would we revolt if he begins to bomb and invade Cuba because Russia decides to stay in Poland? Will you get off your ass then? What is the bottom line before you're willing to get out in the streets or in your own home and make a policy of life, of what life is worth to you? How many people are you going to see killed? How many activities of genocide, whether it's the Indians in Paraguay or in the Amazon or the missing people in Argentina? Ronald Reagan has said clearly he would recognize Argentina. It's none of our business what other countries do. He's talking about the countries we put into power, the coups in Brazil and Argentina and Pinochet in Chile. Do we want heads of states that recognize fascism as a viable government if they are willing to buy our weapons and trade with us? Is that all that America is? Is that what you want to settle for? If you say, my country, right or wrong, we can sell to anybody, we can invade anywhere, then realize that that mentality that Hitler had brought bombs in the towns, that people were killed, that people went off to battle, that a lot of blood was shed and a lot of pain was felt. 28 million people or more died because of Adolf Hitler, and 20 or 30 million more displaced and homeless, and people with tattoos on their arms and torture and terrible experiences. You have to come to terms, I think, with what the bottom line is that you're willing to put up in order to wake up, because it's going to come. It's going to come in stages, and you better have a bottom line of how much you want to take and a group of people that will sit with you and decide that they agree with you, that they've had enough, and plan a course of action. The others are planning their course of action. And if you want change, you have to plan it. You can't wait it along, because no leader's going to come and do it. You're going to do it in bunches, spontaneously, or not at all. Well, that's it. This is the election of 1980. We got a lot of work to do. I've been doing it for 17 years, and if you just get started tomorrow, it's still, the years go fast, and it's worthwhile. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. You take care, and I'll be back next week.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.
KLRB, Carmel by the Sea.
Hello to all friends of the draft resistance revolution in America. Good evening. I hope it stops raining. One thing about the draft resistance that's different from other movements and revolutions in this country is that we have no enemies. And it's one of the beautiful things about it. And to show that our hearts are in the right place, we'd sing a song for the governor of California, Ronald Reagan. Zap. He's a drugstore truck driving man, and he's ahead of the Ku Klux Klan. When summer comes rolling around, we'll be lucky to get out of town. He's been like a father to me. He's like the only DJ you can hear after three. country band. And if he don't like me, he don't understand.
He's a drugstore truck driving man. He's the head of the Ku Klux Klan. When summer comes rolling around, we'll be lucky to get out of town. He's got him a house on the hill.